Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. Nice to have you with us today. So it's a great question. To what do you aspire? Now, to what we aspire may change as we go through different seasons of life. Perhaps as a young parent, you aspired to raising healthy, godly kids. And then as you got through that season, your goal in the teenage years became just to survive your children. And then as they got a little bit older, you aspired to just have a healthy adult relationship with your children and infiltrate the minds of your grandchildren. maybe that you aspired to retirement. And then when you got there, you just aspire to going into a room and remembering why you went into the room to begin with. It changes on seasons. But one thing that should never change that we aspire to should be the type of character that we have. We should aspire to a character that is honoring to God and reflective of a follower of Jesus. For those who are followers of Jesus, that's the type of character that we should aspire to, and that should never change, no matter what season of life that we're in. Now, I hope this isn't too much of a stretch, but I think character is at the core of this part of Paul's letter to young Timothy that's recorded for us in the New Testament. There's a lot of debate and controversy over things that Paul wrote in this section. And ultimately, I think in the controversies and the debate and all of those things, I think undergirding it all is this idea of aspiring to the type of character that honors God and is reflective of a follower of Jesus. So that's where we start, and that's where we'll land at the very, very end and in the middle. We'll wade through the controversies, we'll lay them out there, and just leave them sit. That's what we're going to do. So, Paul writes, "Here is a trustworthy saying, whoever aspires..." Wow, I can't even read that back there. I can read the black, I can't read the yellow at all. Oh, I can read it up there, that's good. All right, well, you guys just join with me. Here's a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. A trustworthy saying is a saying that's worthy of trust. Let's stand for closing prayer. That's it. That's all you get today. A trustworthy saying is a saying that it is dependable, it is reliable, it is something that you can count on. And Paul says that whoever aspires to be an overseer, the word for overseer is the Greek word episkopos, and it is translated overseer. It has also been translated bishop, elder, ruler, and pastor. Now, there is some controversy over this word. Some people have translated this word to be a specific office. Well, a specific office in the church. Other people have translated and said those words are all interchangeable, and they go to one specific office, and it's just different words for the same office. Others, and you see this in more of the mainline denominations. If you don't know what a mainline denomination is, you can either Google it, or you can go Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Baptist, those types of things. And in those denominations, it's set up as more of a hierarchy. You have the bishop, you have elders, you have pastors, you have deacons, and it's more of a hierarchy type of thing set up there. The trustworthy saying part of this, in my mind, is whoever aspires to serve in church leadership, it's a noble task. It is a task worth considering and a task worth pursuing. So, whether the Greek word episkopos is interchangeable or not interchangeable, the task itself is aspiring to a noble task. Now, the overseer is to be above reproach. Now, it was common. Lists of vices were more common in the Greco-Roman culture, but they also included lists of qualifications. Now, if I'm going to hire you for a job, I'm going to let you know what the qualifications are for that job, right? It is very unfortunate and very unfair if I hire you to do a job and then don't tell you the qualifications or the expectations of the job? I would, in essence, be setting you up to fail, correct? And so this list of qualifications, we could expound on each potential one. What we're going to do is we're going to pull out a couple of the more controversial ones and just kind of address those. Now, the overseer is to be above reproach. The phrase above reproach means that the character of the individual is of such a nature that accusations cannot be made against them. There is no grounds for an accusation to be made because of the way that they live. And should an accusation be made against someone who is above reproach, that accusation would not stick because of the character. Someone who has a character above reproach clearly earns the benefit of the doubt when someone comes and says, they did this. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't consider and explore and all of those, but they are usually given the benefit of the doubt because their character is above reproach. So they're supposed to be faithful to his wife. So, if he is supposed to be faithful to his wife, one school of thought says that means an elder, an overseer, an episkopos must be married. So, other people say that what Paul is writing here is he must be, the Greek translation literally means the husband of one wife. And so some people say they have to be married. Well, I will tell you that I served in vocational ministry for 10 years before I was married. So if I was required to be married, to be ordained and licensed and hired to do ministry, all 10 years of that ministry must be null and void and worthless. It must count for nothing, which, if that's the case, maybe the mistakes and the lessons and all of those things that I made and learned during that time are void and all that as well. Now, I also have a friend of mine who was single and in ministry, and then he got married and was in ministry, and then his wife passed away from cancer. It would not seem to make sense to me that what Paul is saying here is that when his wife died and he was no longer married, that he had to step aside from his ministry role because he was single now, or that he had to rush out and get married right away to be able to keep his job. That doesn't seem to make much sense. Other people, it also doesn't seem to make much sense in light of where Paul wrote before that for some it is better not to marry. You see this in the Catholic Church where priests are not allowed to marry so they're not distracted from the task and the responsibilities of ministry. So it doesn't seem to make much sense. Some people also say that he's addressing polygamy in the culture and that this means that you can only have one wife at a time. And you can't have multiple wives. Polygamy was very common. It was actually more common in the Jewish society than in the Greco-Roman society. Some people say that he's addressing widowers, people whose spouse have died, and that. Others say that he's addressing people who are divorced. That if you are married and you divorce, then you remarry, then you're not the husband of one wife, you've had two wives, and so therefore you're ineligible to serve in ministry because you've had two wives. Cycle back to the widowed thing again, and somebody whose spouse died and remarried, they would have had two wives and would have been ineligible based on that line of thinking. So, the Greek word means husband of one wife, and the intent is that they are faithful to the wife that they have. If in the context of above reproach, in the marriage relationship, it is about being faithful. And it means a man of one woman. So another little controversial one is faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness. Some people say that this means that someone who serves in this type of leadership role in the church has to abstain from alcohol completely. that they are not allowed to drink in any way, shape, or form. They are not given to wine. The phrase here, that would actually go against what Paul wrote to Timothy in another place where he told him to drink a little wine for his stomach. And so it doesn't seem that abstinence is really the intent of the wording here. The Greek wording, when it says not given to drunkenness, not given to much wine, the Greek wording literally means one who sits long at the cup. One who sits long at the cup. It seems that in view is an unhealthy dependence or reliance or use of the alcohol rather than use of it in a way. And they said that when people sat long at the cup, and I know this comes as a shock to everyone, when these people sat long at the cup, they got a little bit lack of self-control. They got a little bit quarrelsome. They got a little bit hostile and all of that. And so the intent here seems to be that someone in this position isn't going to sit long at the cup and become quarrelsome and not using self-control. He must manage his own family well. I can't tell you how many times in the midst of one of our family tense moments, I went to my family and said, on Monday morning, I need to go in and quit my job. Because if you cannot conduct yourselves any better than this, then how can I effectively be expected to lead the church? Because the Bible says, he who cannot manage his own family well should not manage the church. And it says, and see that his children obey him. We all know people who have made their children obey them very harshly. And I would argue that that's not obedience, that's compliance, and that's not what Paul had in view. We also know that there are people who their kids obey them because they have no rules. So there's nothing to obey. And I don't think that's what Paul has in mind here. When you see that his children obey him, and he must do so in a manner worthy of full respect, I think what Paul has in view here is parents who are raising their children to love God, to love others, and to live their lives in a manner of common decency and common consideration with view of honoring God and reflecting the life of a follower of Jesus. I think that's that simply put. We all know of stories where the pastor's kid, right? The pastor's kid went off the rails, and so the pastor and his wife must not have raised the kid well. Well, we all know stories where the pastor and his wife did everything right to the best of their ability, and the kid just went off the rails. We also know story after story of pastor's kids who turned out perfectly normal and perfectly well without the little wild oat sowing. You know, I will tell you that for me personally, I'm incredibly proud of my kids. I'm incredibly proud for the character they've developed and the lives they've led and the choices that they make. And I will tell you, they have made those decisions in spite of me sometimes rather than because of me. It says, if anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and full under the same judgment as the devil. After Paul encountered the resurrected Jesus, he went and he studied and prepared and planned for a period of 3 years to really gain a solid foundation of what he believed and what he would teach and the message that God had given him to communicate. After 3 years is when he embarked on his ministry. The implication here is that someone who is not just young, but young in their faith, could possibly be so zealous that it comes across as prideful. And that prideful tends to be off-putting rather than attractive in communicating the message. So someone who is a young convert, and I know a story of a really, really close friend of mine. Back when he was in high school, he made the decision to place his trust in Jesus, became a follower of Jesus, and then he followed that up by going and ticking off all of his friends by how he put the message in front of them that now he was better than them. He became conceited and full of himself and became off-putting. So then he says, in the same way, deacons are to be worthy of respect. Now here's a different word. The word for deacon is often the word that's used of a servant. And it's a different role, it's a different office, it's a different function in the church than the elder or the episcopos, the bishop, the overseer, and all of that. In the same way, deacons are to be worthy of respect, sincere, not indulging in much wine, and not pursuing dishonest gain. It says that they are to be worthy of respect, and part of the phrasing there talks about someone who's not double-tongued. And someone who is double-tongued says one thing to one person and something to the other. They can't be taken at their word. And so the deacons are supposed to be trustworthy, which means worthy of trust. There you go. Thank you. Everyone wake up. What's the score of the hockey game? Anybody know? Still 1-1? Is it into regulation? Yeah? 1-1. We're going into overtime. I wish we had picture-in-picture up here. I obviously wouldn't be able to see it back there if it was anything yellow, but so, and then not indulging in much wine, that's kind of the same idea that he talked about with the overseers, and not pursuing dishonest gain. Most scholars believe that one of the responsibilities that the deacons in the church had was to collect the money. And so to put somebody in the position to collect money means that you want someone in that position whose character is not gravitating towards dishonest gain. The last person you would want to put in charge of your money is the person who desires dishonest gain. They must keep hold of the deep truths of the faith with a clear conscience. It is important that people who serve in church leadership know what they believe and why they believe it. It doesn't mean that we have every controversy settled. It doesn't mean that we have every debate settled. It doesn't mean that we don't later change because we find new information and we realize 30 years ago I was wrong. You know, it doesn't mean that we stake our flag in every position. What it means is that we hold to the deep truths of the faith, the things that are essential, the things that are most important about what we believe. We believe that God loves humankind so much that when the relationship with God was broken because of sin, God needed a solution. God needed a way, a path for the broken relationship to be restored. And out of his great love for us and out of his grace, he sent his very own son to become the sacrifice that would redeem sin and to restore the path of relationship to humankind for all who would place their trust in them. We believe that Jesus is the very Son of God who left the privileges and position of heaven to take on the form of humankind, to live sinless among us, to die on a cross as the sacrifice for our sins, and to be raised from the dead to defeat death in his resurrection, who now sits at the right hand of God, waiting for his return, where he will claim the church, his bride. In the bodily resurrection of humankind, to reign with him for all eternity. I don't care. Let me rephrase that. It's not that I don't care. Everything else to me is secondary. And if I'm going to spend my time and energy, I'll be happy to have conversation after conversation about those things. But if I'm going to spend my time and energy, I'm going to spend my time and energy making sure that people know the deep truths of the faith rather than peripheral issues that might keep someone from the faith. When I served in student ministries, every volunteer that we had, every team member that we had to go through an application and an interview process before they were allowed to serve in our student ministries. At the end of the application process and the interview process, the last question to every person who wanted to join our student ministries team was, is there anything in your life that, should it be made known, would compromise the integrity and effectiveness of this student ministry? That is the clear conscience question. That is the one that, is there anything in your life that would distract from the message or the effectiveness of this ministry? And must hold to the truths of the deep faith with a clear conscience. that I have studied, that I have learned, that I have placed my trust, and with a clear conscience, I can tell you, this is what I believe, and this is why I believe it. It says they must first be tested, and then if there is nothing against them, let them serve as deacons. Testing isn't uncommon. Moses was tested as a shepherd for 40 years before God sent him to Pharaoh to release the Israelites after 400 years of slavery and to lead them out of the nation of Egypt. Joseph was tested before he was put in charge. He was tested in Egypt before he was put in charge as the second highest ruling leader in the nation of Egypt. David, King David, the greatest king in Israel's history. King David served as a shepherd in his father's sheep or shepherding business before he was then put into Saul's household as a servant, as a musician, and then he was put into Saul's army. He did all of those things before he became king. He was tested. It means to be tested and proved worthy. And then, if there is nothing against them, let them serve as deacons. And he says, in the same way, the women are to be worthy of respect, not malicious talkers, but temperate and trustworthy in everything. Now, a little bit of controversy around this. Some scholars believe that Paul is writing about women. This seems very odd and very random that he's talked about overseers. He's in the middle of talking about deacons, and then he drops this line in about women. And it's like, okay, who's he talking about? Some scholars believe that he's talking about women in general, that women in the church in general should be like this. Some people believe that he is talking about women who are the wives of deacons specifically. Other people believe that he is talking about women who serve as deaconesses. So you have male deacons and female deaconesses. And he's talking specifically because he was talking about deacons here, and then he drops the women. It's the women who serve as deaconesses. I will tell you this. I don't think it matters. I think Paul wrote to who he wrote, and I will tell you that for me, whether it's deaconesses,